Today is from John chapter 5, verses 1 through 15. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool and the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath, and so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, "It is a Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you're well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. You know, there are a lot of things that we hear over and over again, and sometimes you wish that if you had heard this thing, had $5 every time you heard it, you'd be a rich person. Well, there's one out there that I've heard over and over again, and we've all heard it before, and that is, God helps those who help themselves. Now, the cynical Christian in me says, well, where is that in the Bible? It must be First Hezekiah or someplace. Of course, if you know the Bible, there's no such thing as Hezekiah, but actually Ben Franklin said that. Now, just because Ben Franklin said it and it's not in the Bible doesn't mean it's not true, right? And so what is the answer to that question before we get to the end? Well, I'm going to give you a good theological, maybe lawyerly answer, yes and no. Yes. Sometimes it's true. God helps those who help themselves. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about what that means. But in the end, it's a big fat N-O, capital N, no. And I'll tell you about that as well. Before we get started, I have a couple of side roads. Don't worry, I'm not going to go too long. But a couple of observations about this passage. It's a really interesting story. And the first observation is that in the absence of biblical truth, human nature will tend toward superstition. In the absence of biblical truth, human nature will tend toward superstition. Now, in this particular scenario, this story, when the wind blew, it was felt like there must be an angel or something that was doing it, and people would try to get into the water and be healed. And some of the waters may have had healing properties, but there was this idea that if you could just get in time, and that's what was motivating this guy who had been there quite some time. Now, some people might say, well, the Bible is full of superstition, right? We get that a lot. Believe in God, to believe in miracles. But I think it's quite the opposite. To believe in God is quite rational. I had a friend a long time ago, in college actually, who was an expert in astrology. Now, this person was a really smart person. And I wasn't a Christian at the time, but I was kind of listening to what she had to say, and I'm kind of going, wow, okay. But later, after I became a Christian, I would answer people like this. I would say, what is more rational? To believe that your life is being controlled by impersonal planets and the movements of the stars and the planets,
or your life is being controlled by a personal creator God. What's more rational? Well, in my view, the second is much more rational. In fact, why would you want to believe that the stars are controlling your destiny? Well, partly it's an excuse. You see, the stars and the planets don't require anything of you, whereas the God who made the universe does. But that's part of it. That's part of it. So when we don't have biblical truth, it's easy for people to turn toward superstition. And because we tend to be religious, we tend to believe that there's some power out there somewhere. What is it? Well, it's something else. But in our view, in the biblical view, it's the God of the universe who's in charge. The second observation is that people
have spiritual blindness happen when they major on minors. The Jewish leaders, the leaders
got wrapped around the axle, if you will, by the fact that the man was healed on the Sabbath. You know, back in another time in school when I was in seminary, I had a friend who was named Fred. And Fred and I, we did a lot of things together. And one day he asked me to go fishing, and we went fishing together. And we were sitting fishing at this little pond somewhere in Philadelphia. I forgot what it was. But he says, "Chris, you know what I like about you? That you will go fishing with me on Sunday." I knew what he meant. See, Fred had a brother who was a nice guy. Don't get me wrong. He had a nice family. But he was really into the Sabbath idea. We're not going to do anything on the Sabbath because that's breaking the Sabbath. And he got so legalistic about it that Fred didn't mention that he was his brother. He was going fishing. But he did it with me. That's what was going on here. You know, rules are good. And you know, our society is, I want to use a term that I think we all should know, antinomian. It's a word that means anti-law. Nomos is law or rule. Anti-rules. And we live in a culture that's so anti-rules. You know, I know a lot of you, and it's good, you may not have a television around here. That's okay. But you can learn a lot from commercials. And if you remember the steakhouse, you know, no rules, just right. How can you have something just right if there are no rules? I mean, if you cook a steak 5 minutes, it's rare. If you cook it 10, maybe it's well done. But that's the rule, right? Well, but it was feeding into the society, this Outback Steakhouse idea. No rules, just right, because nobody likes rules. Or right now, the more modern commercial is, let you be you and me be me. Oh, that sounds great, but it's just awful. What if me means being a serial killer? Oh, well, no rules, right? That's where we are. But on the other hand, we do know that sometimes rules can be a means to themselves. When God gives us the Ten Commandments, yeah, I was so disappointed the other day. A major pastor, Andy Stanley, said that Christians should not have anything to do with the Ten Commandments anymore. Because he thinks, because we live in a ruleless or a society that's anti-law, that we won't be able to do evangelism with the young people anymore. And I'm going, oh, he knows a lot more than I do about a lot of things, but gee whiz, Andy, what are you doing? But we all know that rules can be used in a wrong way. When we forget the spirit of the rule versus and the intent, which is God's way of saying, if you do these things, your life will be okay. If you don't do these things, or the bad part of it, your life will be better. But the Sabbath becomes just a means to itself, or keeping a rule, it becomes something legalistic. So, those two observations are going on.
right in this particular passage. Which brings us to the lessons of the passage having to do with what's going on with this man and what it means for our life as well. And one of the first lessons I think that's in here is that before God does anything in your life, you have to want Him to do something in your life. Steve Brown calls it, our wanter has to be in the right place. He's talking about our will. We have to want to God to help us. So when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? Now, can you imagine going into a hospital, someone laying in the bed, deathly sick, and say, do you want to get well? Jesus had a funny way about him, didn't he? He was very direct. We think he was just all, you know, kind of roses and nice and... No, he was just right there. But what was going on with this man that he would ask such a question? Well, we don't really know. All we know is that he had been coming to this pool for a long time, but he had been sick for 38 years. Now, there's another story in the Bible which might help us a little bit. It was a paralytic who had his friends take this guy, him, up on a roof. And some houses had flat roofs. And Jesus was down in the roof and had them dig through the roof to get him down to see Jesus. I can imagine the guy going, dig, dig, dig. I want to see Jesus. But this guy was this, you know, have you ever met people? And I realize this is hard. I've met people who like being sick. I've met people who like having their problems. It works for them. You know, I've dealt with people, and I'm saying this to myself. I have some things that I just, Lord, help me do this, but I don't really want to get rid of them because they work. Make me feel better. Don't we have stuff like that? We say, Lord, help me get rid of this. We don't really want to do it. Lord, help me with that. Now, there are things that we can't get rid of ourselves, and that's the other part of it. But there are some things that, you know, I have several relatives who are alcoholics. And I know what that's like. I know what dealing with those people is like. Something worked for them with that. And there are all kinds of things. There are just hundreds of things that are things we might be even addicted to. But what are you doing about it? Well, maybe you don't want to do anything about it. And this man had to come to a place where maybe he wanted to be well.
And Jesus uses, as he often does, shock therapy on this particular man. Before he does anything, God does anything in our life, we have to want him to do it. Because there's a powerful emotion in us that wants us to keep the same things going on. Steve Brown tells a story about a lady who came up to him and said, after he was teaching, he says, Steve, I have a problem with that passage. He said, what is it? He said, I don't want to do what it tells me to do. And she thought about it and said, well, I guess I'm just going to have to get on my knees and ask God to change me and change what I want. And that's exactly right. Second lesson I think that's in here is if we face an insurmountable problem, we can make excuses or ask for help. Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. To go along with what I was just talking about, we all make excuses.
We all come up with things, the reasons we can't do things. Now, there are some things in life, obviously, we can't change. I do like that serenity prayer, Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change. When I got in the Army and over a long time, and Cindy will laugh. I began to say, it is what it is. It was one of those things you got in the Army. There's nothing you can do about it. It is what it is. You just have to kind of accept it. But there are some things in our lives that we simply make excuses about. Oh, it's my wife's fault. Oh, it's my husband's fault. Oh, it's my father's fault. Oh, it's the school principal's fault. It's my teacher's fault. It's I don't have enough money's fault. It's my economic situation. If only I had not had this person in my life, I would be able to do something better. Sometimes it's true. But many times it's simply our excuse because we don't want to change. We don't want to have something different going on because it's really hard. When I was in Florida for the last several years, I felt for these folks who got older and didn't want to leave their house. I'm going to stay here until they drag me out, and that's usually what happened, is they would get drug out. I did try to say, you know, you need to make a change here before somebody makes the decision for you. Do you want your child to make that decision for you? Many times, no! Well, guess what? It's going to happen. I was just trying to be honest, and they didn't really like that, but that's what happened. But they said, we don't like change. We don't like to move. Whether it's literally or not. We don't like to change. And we make excuses for that. And I don't know what's going on in this man's heart, but it seems to me that Jesus did and saw something in him. I really like a story I read a long time ago about a well-known Presbyterian minister named Bruce Larson. He wrote several books. You may have heard his name. He told a story a while back, a long time ago, I recently saw my doctor for a general checkup. After several tests, I was granted an audience with the doctor himself. He checked me a little further, made a few comments about my cholesterol, and finally pronounced me a fairly healthy specimen. All through the interview, however, I found myself bracing for the moment when he would tell me that I was overweight. I was already making up excuses since I'm one of those people who hates being told what to do. Well, my doctor was prepared for me. When he had finished probing, poking, charting, and recording, he took off his glasses and looked at me across the desk. He said, "Tell me, Mr. Larson, how do you feel about your weight?" How do I feel about my weight? What kind of ridiculous question was that? I was prepared to have him tell me how he felt about my weight. That would make my weight his problem. In response to that, I could employ all the means of resistance I had mastered across the years, but now he wanted to know what I felt. When he noticed my baffled look, he continued, "Why don't you tell me what you would like to weigh?" He had me. I thought for a moment and finally mumbled a figure several numbers south of my present weight. "Excellent," he said. "I think I can help you with your problem." And maybe the moral of the story is admitting the problem. We find it in the Bible over and over again. Jesus gets really mad at people who will not admit that they have a problem. We don't think of Jesus getting mad, but if you hadn't read the Bible, he gets mad a lot. And he gets mad mostly at folks who are just la 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 la. Or folks who will just adamantly think they're okay when they're not. So does God help those who help themselves? You bet. We have to admit we have a problem. We have to want to change enough to maybe change, or at least begin the process, seek help. And that's the next lesson we come to. Is God works in the life of a believer before faith becomes evident in the life of a believer. God works in the life of a... You know, this man didn't really do anything. We tend to think, well, he healed that person because he had faith. Jesus does that. But very often, Jesus just comes along and says, be healed. Or enters that person's life without even asking. Jesus said to him, pick up your mat and walk. He hadn't really, maybe he noticed he had, who knows, it doesn't sound like it. John would say that. He just says, pick up your mat and walk. And at once the man was cured, he picked up his mat and he walked. It doesn't say whether he had faith or not. In fact, he didn't even know who Jesus was. Jesus leaves right after this, and he's confronted. Why are you walking? Why are you walking, picking your mat up? Well, this guy healed me. I don't know who he was. You know, Jesus does that for us. Can you? I remember my own salvation experience, and many times in my life, and you maybe as well. You know, when things are happening, we think we're making choices and we're doing things, and we are. But looking back, I can see where God was kind of pushing and nudging. Things would happen to me. Usually it was kind of like the rolled up newspaper. Whack! Or maybe it was something worse. And God sort of brought me to a place. I think we can look back and see where God brings us to places where we choose Him and He led us in that direction. It's by grace, my friends. We've been singing about that. There's one thing you can't do. One thing I cannot do. I cannot save myself. You cannot die for your own sins. But Jesus did. You can't save yourself. The problem is okay, Jesus died for me. Now I have to do it all by myself. Like the two-year-old, you know, I'm going to do it by myself. And does God want us to work? Does God want us to try? You bet. Choose? Yes. But even sanctification, the process of God working in our lives, is by grace as well. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge Him. And He will direct your path. Our relationship with God is a dependent one. Does God want you to be strong and faith? And does God want you to trust Him and to be brave and courageous and do things? Yes, indeed. But in the end, there are some things you cannot do for yourself. Does God help those who help themselves? I say yes, but no, because God helps those who can't help themselves and know it. And our problem is whether we know it or not, a lot of times. Now, last but not least, faith enables us to have a proper perspective on pain and suffering. Here was a guy who was in his predicament for years and years and years. Later, Jesus will heal a guy who born blind. And he will say the most audacious thing. He'll say God intended for him to be blind so that the glory of God could be seen in him. Whoa. We'll get to that. Now, this is probably worth several sermons. I'm not going to do that. But I do it. There are a couple of things here I just want to leave us with. Not everything about suffering is meant to be some great lesson. Sometimes we just suffer. We're minding our own business and something terrible happens. Because life is that way. Because God has not promised us life without suffering. And we don't always know why it's us. You know, that's the question. Why me, Lord? And sometimes we will not be given that answer, why us. So, but in general, suffering does teach us some things. It teaches us that this world is not our home. And all the effort we make go to making it so comes to nothing in the end. We want to live as long as possible, as comfortably as possible. And we make so much effort into making ourselves comfortable. And I'm not sure God always wants us to be comfortable. That comes later. I think that's one of the things we have to remember. And we don't always know why it's us. But we do know that God has plans for our life. And His plans are not always our plans. Some of the suffering I've had in my life is God whacking me over the head and saying, change directions now. Because I don't want you to go there. And I had to learn the hard way that God's way, path, is better than mine. And I think in the end, He also wants us to remember that we are not in control of everything. And that's okay. That's okay. I joke a lot, you know. Every now and then I'll say something like, I'm glad I'm not in charge. If I was in charge, I would have messed it up a long time ago. But I'm still keep wanting to be in charge. And God has to keep saying to me, nope, you're not. And I have to continually learn that lesson. No, it does. Sometimes suffering doesn't have a big, huge thing for us, like God made you suffer to learn this. Sometimes it's just that we suffer. But in general, suffering does teach us that we're not in charge. This world is not our home. And then God, despite our suffering, that we might think He doesn't, He really loves us and will bring us home someday. And we have to trust that and believe that and live that. Would you pray with me? Lord God, forgive us for thinking that you're out to get us, because sometimes it seems that way. Forgive us for thinking we're in charge, because it's silly. Forgive us for forgetting that this world isn't our home, and even though we try to make it so. Help us to trust you, even in the midst of very hard things. In the good and the bad. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.